military family. Lots of moves, lots of war, tours of war. I'd say some great travel experiences on holiday with the family, others probably less describable, but
maybe not so great. Yeah.
But you know, he's seen the world.
We'll have to find out more this weekend. We are going to talk about a really exciting place today. Part two. This is our first part two. How do we feel about breaking up part one and part two?
We'll have to ask the listeners, but I think pretty good. Last time was thought-provoking on a city, and this time is the structure of what was an awesome trip.
Yeah, I agree. So, double trouble. We've got two podcasts on Rome, and we are going to get into all the wonderful things in part two, but not before we talk about some travel news. Have you heard the news today?
I don't think I have. What's the news?
This is going to shock you. This is more controversy about how things are rated in Australia by external news sources, well, travel magazines, actually, and how they're rating things in Australia, which at this point, 2 weeks in a row, I'm starting to take a personal offense to.
Let me guess, Condé Nast, bugging it up again?
No, this is actually Food and Wine.
Oh.
Yeah, so we're going to talk a little bit about this travel news today because it is absolutely shocking. So, Hugh, you're a coffee aficionado. I think you would call yourself a classic cappuccino man, but you do really enjoy coffee. Am I right?
Aficionado, probably a bit too far for me, but yeah, I like a simple cappuccino, solid, strong, gets me going in the morning, one a day, fantastic.
Okay, yeah, aficionado. I just wanted to give you that, but I loved to drink coffee. If some people don't know, I was a massive coffee drinker, and I would have said I was an aficionado.
You were definitely an aficionado.
I loved coffee. I loved learning about it, knowing about it. I've had multiple coffee tours. I know how coffee is made. I've seen the plantations. I have harvested the coffee beans. I have seen them roasted. And I love everything about coffee, except I had a bit of an accident last year, which caused me to no longer be able to drink coffee, which is sad. And I've been mourning the loss ever since. However, that does not mean I don't have the memory of what it was like to be a coffee drinker. And it also doesn't mean I'm not still tied to what it means to drink coffee.
In Australia.
So my credentials are, I lived in Australia for 4.5 years as a coffee drinker. And I visited Melbourne a number of times, drank many coffees there. And I live in Sydney, so.
Aussies know when you think of coffee, you think of Melbourne.
You think of Melbourne. And so we're going to get into the news. First fact I think is interesting. Just, I want to get your take. How many coffee cups a day do you think are drunk?
Globally. It would be some terrifying number, like 300, 400, 500 million cups of coffee.
2.25 billion cups of coffee are drank each day.
So, okay.
Yes.
20% of the world drinks coffee every day. But I know that probably people have lots of cups of coffee.
Yeah. I mean, you're a one cappuccino man, but honestly, I could never relate to you because I drank multiple cups of coffee a day. And I was never a one cappuccino gal. Never was, never will be. I think that, yeah. 2.25 billion.
Symbolism is not a relationship, I hope. Yeah.
No. I think that this is a really, well, I think this is interesting just because I've never seen this stat before. I would be curious to know how many of these people are Italians, because as we witnessed when we were in Rome, so many people drink coffee there and many espressos a day. People are drinking espresso there well into the night. Let's talk a little bit about this list. So Food and Wine came out with their list of the top 10 cities for coffee, according to the experts. And this was published on April 2nd, 2024. I think that this is really interesting because coffee is, as we know, already on this podcast, divisive, and people are opinionated about coffee. I'm one of them. Just to get your frame of reference, where would you say that the number one best place is that you've ever had a coffee?
Italy, probably.
Okay.
If not...
Take us there. Where were you at? what we were doing? Or was it just generally every time you've been to Italy?
I just recognize great espresso there being part of the restaurant experience. I'd also say the Middle East is incredible for coffee as well.
It's very different.
Saudi Arabia was... All right, if we're going to go with favorite cup of coffee, it would be Riyadh, Saudi Arabia.
Okay. All right. Unfortunately, nowhere in the Middle East even made it on this list. But that's not going to surprise you when you hear the results. The best coffee that I've had, the Middle East is really different coffee. So it's, my dad actually had said, it is so thick that it tastes like you could have just smoked a pack of cigarettes, which honestly.
Which most of them are doing.
Most of them are doing, and it's not so far off. It is thick coffee and no thickeners in it. It's just really quite thick coffee.
Two C's.
Yeah. And so I really did enjoy that though. I mean, it's thick and it's has enough energy to keep you going for days on end. That's one way to look at good, I think, in terms of the energy output. But the other best cup of coffee I think I have had, it probably would be, Melbourne is just really crafty. And they have so much care and consideration in their coffee. And I'm not even saying this to be controversial in this article, but the way that they, anywhere you go, has impeccable coffee and food for that matter. And it's just so different than Sydney, because to be honest, my experience in Sydney is that it's really difficult to find high quality, good coffee. Most people burn the coffee. You can taste it when you're drinking it. And I've been to so many more places in Sydney than I have in Melbourne. So I would say Melbourne is number one. I really loved that, the times I've had coffee there.
Melbourne in Australia is number one.
Melbourne, in my book. That being said, I haven't visited everywhere, so we've got some things to do. But in my experience on the planet thus far, Melbourne is number one.
So tell us about this list.
The list. Okay, let's get into it. The number one on their list is Copenhagen, Denmark. I actually have no doubt that Copenhagen probably does have incredible coffee. I do question that. Someone would need to validate this to me. So if you've had great coffee in Denmark, then please let me know. I think a lot of people recently, I've been hearing a lot of good things about Denmark. I haven't visited, but it seems great. They've got a little blurb here about, you know, a Dane who won the World Coffee Championship in 2005. It sounds like they've got something going for them. We're going to go through this list. Number two on the list is Tokyo, Japan.
I haven't been. Wouldn't be surprised if it's awesome coffee.
I wouldn't be surprised either. I haven't been either. And again, I would love to know what people think of Japanese coffee. I now drink matcha, which is also Japanese. And it's impeccable. So that's the only way I can relate.
Do you like that word tonight?
It is maybe replaced stunning.
That would be good.
Just kidding. I mean, who knows? We'll see how the podcast goes. Number three, the biggest shock of all, Sydney, Australia. So
it's just not true.
It's just not true. But also, this is what the blurb says. Yes, Sydney is a laid-back beach town. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's
not really laid-back, but okay.
Not a laid-back beach town. And the atmosphere in its cafe most certainly matches the vibe, but the coffee here is serious business. No. Okay. All right. For a choice in brews, head to Surrey Hills area, which comes packed with cafes, including Single O's flagship store. Pick up single origin or bean blend along with what else? And an Australian flat white. So here's the thing. Surrey Hills probably does have the best coffee in Sydney, but it's still subpar to Melbourne. And it's also not consistent throughout Surrey Hills either.
It's also that coffee in Surrey Hills and cafes are heavily influenced and probably the ideas are taken from Melbourne.
Yeah, exactly. It's so funny. Moving on. San Francisco, United States. I have had coffee here and I can confirm they care a lot about their coffee and it is really, really good. This actually would be in my top three best coffee cities. So I think this one is fine. Number three, happy to find out. It is not Rome as we're talking about today, but it is Milan, Italy. So Italy is number five on the list.
Repeat that. You said number three.
Anyway, sorry, just kidding. Number five.
Number five is what?
Number five is Milan, Italy.
Wow. Okay. Haven't been. Don't know.
I have been to Milan, but it was
You
after.
Weren't drinking coffee, yeah.
I wasn't drinking coffee. I think that they very well could be. I mean, I'm curious as to, well, I'm questioning the integrity of this list after Sydney being number three, but we'll see. We have Lisbon.
Lisbon. Okay.
Lisbon.
Yeah, Lisbon on some coffee.
Lisbon, Portugal. Have you been to Lisbon?
I have not been to Lisbon. I have not been to Lisbon. No,
Lisbon.
I haven't.
Lisbon. Yeah. They say it's a very nice blend of traditional and modern between the classic Portuguese pastarias, serving bica, a single shot espresso, alongside different pastries. You can't go wrong, apparently. So yeah, that one's fine. Seven is Amsterdam. I have also had coffee in Amsterdam and it was very good. They do care about their coffee. Different in Amsterdam, a coffee shop is very specific and different to a cafe.
Mm.
Took me a huge trips to figure that out, but they have really good coffee. Did you have coffee when you were there?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But
did you rate it?
I rated it. I was probably, you know, not, I wasn't going there for the coffee.
Yeah. Okay. Then we have number eight, London, England, which you said, and actually I did have coffee there before. It wasn't stand out to me, so I can't really speak to it, but you said that
there's nothing from South America so far as well.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. It's a little bit
Western.
I think that they should put asterisks. This is Western. Number nine is Cape Town, South Africa. I don't think that surprises me at all.
No.
South Africa. Number 10 is, drumroll, Melbourne, Australia. Absolute shocker.
Bullshit.
Ridiculous. And it says, no, this is what the blurb says. No list of best coffee cities would be complete without at least two Australian locations. No, you only need one. One is needed.
I'd pick Adelaide over Sydney. Like, do Melbourne and somewhere else. But yeah, anyway.
Yeah. Okay. So then here we have their plus one. Do you just want to venture a guess what continent their plus one is on?
North America?
No. Kigali, Rwanda. So,
oh, well, that's
in Africa.
Yeah, cool.
So finally, we get some actual representation here of, you know, somewhere outside the, you know, Western
civilization.
So yeah, I thought this list was interesting because I then read a post about it, and then Time Out had said, and this is Time Out Sydney, they had said, you know, Sydney wins against Melbourne and the coffee conversation. And I just think it's not true. It's not better. And so food and wine, I think you need to reconsider.
It's not just the coffee, it's the cafes as well.
The cafes. But if you asked anybody here in Australia, they would tell you Melbourne is better.
Go to Melbourne for it. Yeah.
I will tell you, I had a matcha in Melbourne. And to be fair, this actually contributes to what we're talking about. Matcha is not that easy to find in Melbourne because they're so obsessed with coffee that when you go to most of these cafes, they only have really nice coffee. But I had a matcha and it was one of the best matchas I've ever had. Actually, it probably is the best one I had. And it had an orange peel on the side and it had like a little bit of orange zest in it. So it was this, you know, kind of earthy matcha with some orange zest, perfect amount of sugar, iced, but not too much ice. It was amazing. Absolutely amazing.
10 out of 10.
So in travel news, if you've had really good coffee somewhere in some country, would be interested to hear where your favorites are, because in this call so far we have Melbourne and we just got out of work calls not too long ago, so in this call we have Melbourne and we have
Sydney.
No, where did you say your favorite one was?
Oh.
Italy.
Riyadh.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, Riyadh. Okay. All right. Well, with that, that's our travel news for the day. So with that, we're going to move into our Rome podcast, which is going to be absolutely wonderful because today we are talking about our full itinerary. To set the stage, we recorded our first podcast talking a little bit about the food, talking about gluten-free. eating gluten-free in Rome, and we talked about
the energy,
the vibes,
yeah,
everything that was going on in our minds when we first landed there. And so this is going to be an extension of that. There's going to be a couple of things that might be repetitive that we maybe touched on a bit in the last one, but there's going to be some new information as well. And we're diving into our two-day itinerary. We landed in Rome on the Friday night, and we left on Monday morning. So we had 3 nights, 2 full days to really get everything out of Rome that we could possibly get. So we'll jump in and talk a little bit about day one. And this is everything we did. This is not everything you have to do, but we had a really good time with this itinerary, and we think that you will too. So let's talk a little bit about day one. Hugh, set us up for us. How did you prepare the day one, and what did we get up to?
Well, for those of you who listened to part one, you know that this was on me the couple of days, which I thoroughly enjoyed. I had spent lots of time in Rome before. I love that city. It's a great spot. So when the opportunity came to be able to take you and to go there once more, I kind of stuck with what I knew, but also just wanted to explore a few more and do a bit of the classics. You hadn't really explored Italy ever, / you'd never been there before. So I was keen to dig into the history, dig into all of the food and the wines and just the classics. So I got us a place near Piazza Navona. For those of you who have been there before, you know that's really central within the city of Rome, right in the heartland of the old city. It's only sort of 10 minutes from the Vatican. It is 15 to 20 minutes tops to the Colosseum. It's a really great location to base yourself in. Also because it's a little bit touristy, but it's not completely overpowering where there's lots of people trying to stay by the Colosseum, et cetera, et cetera. When we woke up that first day, after a great first night in Relay Orso, near Piazza Navona, we actually headed straight to one place that I would recommend everyone go to, and that's Campo di Fuori.
Well, before that, we got up really early and we went to Trevi Fountain.
So when we woke up at lovely exam location, Relay also near Piazza Navona, we, of course, with a little bit of jet lag, were up at the crack of dawn. And the first thing we did was head to one of the most popular spots, which is the Trevi Fountain. So that was only about 15 minutes tops from where we were. Yeah. And the Trevi Fountain, we've all seen pictures of it. You know that throughout any hour of the day, it's pretty busy. One thing I would recommend, and what we did so well, we went there at about 6:30 in the morning.
Yeah, you have to go there early. There's people always there, but that was the best time. There were people there, but it wasn't overwhelming. And so go there first thing in the morning. It's on, it's stunning, and it is worth going to see before all of the crowds.
It was pretty quiet. There are a couple of people there, but it's just so beautiful. And actually, as the sun's coming up, given the direction that it faces, you've got glistening over the beautiful building that's behind it. You get to see it in all its glory, and you're not worried about one, other tourists, or two, the occasional pickpocket.
Yeah.
So what did we do after that?
So after that, we went to the markets, and the market that we went to, they were they're called Campo di Fuori.
Campo di Fuori. No, I think you actually pronounced it considerably better than me. Campo di Fuori.
We went to these markets and
it's this beautiful old square. There's a lot of history to it. It's where markets have been going on for hundreds of years. It's also a great nightlife location. Keep that in mind if you're looking for a spot out in Rome. But when we got there, it was full Saturday markets. So everyone was out selling a combination of olive oils to gorgeous fruit and veg to really classic Italian specialties to different paste, whatever you can think of. There was something there for everyone, basically.
Yeah, and you if you're like me and you're always looking for where you can get your next green juice, there was a place that did these fresh juices. We loved that. We stocked up on some souvenirs. We got some limoncello. We got some truffle oil. We also got some truffle salt, those types of things. They are a little bit in your face, the sellers. So, you know, be aware of that. But once we had made a really nice round, we popped off on the side of one of the cafes and had a really lovely breakfast while the crowds kind of started to come in. So
worth saying, it's a great place to practice your negotiation skills.
A really great place. Yeah. If you're learning Italian and you want to negotiate, really awesome spot. And there's some good negotiating that can happen there. And we loved it. We were able to get some gifts and have a really nice breakfast all pretty early in the morning, because I think that it opened at what, 8? Started?
I think it started at about 7:30 or 8. Yeah,
we were the first people there. And to be honest, it felt at this point that we were able to experience Rome without that many people, which was really lovely.
Awesome walking through the streets, yeah, in between the Trevi and Campo Fuori, and not being bombarded and actually having the place to yourself.
Yeah, 100%. After that, we made our way, we went back to our hotel to have a bit of a recalibration. We changed and then set sail on our first shopping adventure.
Which was your highlight, wasn't it?
It was such a highlight, yes. So we went shopping on the side streets. And when you're there, there's so many great little side streets. But if you go and look at Piazza Navona and you actually look where Relea Orso is as a hotel, the side streets are right, you know, right around there. There's so many shops there. We really just walked around the corner and we're straight into this first silk tie and scarf shop where I fell for the internal marketing. It was a lovely shop, and Obama had received a tie.
Classic store. They've got all the pictures of celebrities and various people that have come through, you know, from the bloody Sopranos to Barack Obama. They've all been through that.
Yeah. And honestly, that told me that I needed to get something from there as well. So I got a really lovely headband, silk scarf headband, which I love. Or actually, maybe it's just a silk scarf and I just wear it as a headband. But I got one of those there, and that started us off. There was so many lovely places that we went.
So for people looking for the location of this.
Oh, thank you.
This is called the Via del Corso, C-O-R-S-O, which is one of the most famous shopping streets. It carries on for miles. You can turn left or right, and you'll find a mix of some really beautiful old stores with owners who've been working there for 50 years, alongside some very neatly tucked in designer stores as well, which, you know, they're able to stay on top of all the tourists coming in. But it's a stunning place. It's a really tiny street. You just carry on and on, and would thoroughly recommend you spend a couple of hours there. I'm not a big shopper myself. I still ended up finding some gorgeous linen and various things there.
Yeah, it's a really lovely spot and a must-see in Rome, I will say. And then we made our way back to our hotel again, where we changed our outfits and headed to the Colosseum.
The Colosseum, we did indeed. Yes, we had a tour booked for early afternoon. Worth bearing in mind, if you're there in summer, it's midday is actually fine. It's more the like 2 to 4 where it's...
I would say biggest change I would make is do the first tour that they have.
Yes. Yeah, no, that's true. When it comes to tourists,
it was so
the heat
hot.
The heat, it gets worse and worse as the afternoon goes on, but it's made worse by all the tourists there. So we probably could have done a little bit better with when we went there, but what I would say is no matter how busy it is, it's still magnificent.
It is magnificent, and I 100% agree. I think that it would be beautiful, and it is beautiful no matter what. But I think we learned a few things from this this adventure on the Colosseum. It is stunning. It's remarkable. And it is unlike anything else you've ever seen. And I think that the two main things that I would say, do the first tour and try to book a private tour, because there actually is a private underground night tour that I really want to do next time when we're there that I had heard about. And that's just private. And then you also can book private tours, so you're not in such a big group, because we ended up being in the group of 30.
So this is where they'll get you. And this is my mistake, but I booked a semi-private tour for us, is what it's called. And you'll see that. You'll see a bit of a price differential between that and private. And you'll think, you know, five or six others on the tour will be fine. No, it's not five or six others. It is 46 others. And they're all trying to... The guides are great, but there's just too many people within each of these tours.
Yeah. It's so many people to be walking around in your same group. I think that's the biggest issue, because there's all these other really big groups. But if you have a small group of five people, you can actually weasel through quite quickly. But we did not. And I think that that just made it more about, you know, we were just shifting around different people, and it was really quite hot. And yeah, I think that that's definitely one thing we would do. But I do know, and I don't know what the company is, so I'll try to find it and put it in the intro, what company does the night tours, because I had found before we had went that there was someone I follow on Instagram. They had posted that they did this night tour of the Colosseum, and it was really amazing. And I think that that would be really cool and unique experience. And then actually your family friend, Jane, she had also said that she had done that same tour and she really loved it, because she actually follows the same people. So I'll include the company name in the intro. After the Colosseum, we continued on and we had a really wonderful time in the Roman Forum, which is connected to the Colosseum. Essentially, it's kind of in the same area and it is brilliant. I really loved the Roman Forum. We had a local tour guide, you, and we didn't need any other tour guide, but we just went at our own pace. It was the afternoon at that point, so it was maybe, I don't know, 5, 6 p.m. And we had a really lovely time meandering around the Roman Forum. What did you think?
I completely agree. Look, whether you know a lot about the Forum that I might, my dad will be happy. He organized a tour there for me in complete French the last time I was there at 16. That didn't go so well, but I must have picked up something. But a lot of the tours that you book will say, oh, you know, for 50% more, you can get a joint tour of the Colosseum and the Roman Forum. I don't think you need to take, unless it's a great private tour, I don't think you need to get a guide for the Roman Forum. You can walk around. There are signs depicting and explaining what everything is and give you an idea of how foundational this area is to the history of our Western culture as we know it. But yeah, it's a magnificent area to explore, and definitely dedicate an hour or two there to really see it and experience it.
It was amazing. We really loved it. And leaving from there, we had a really lovely walk back to our accommodation. We walked past birthday cake.
Yes, the birthday cake is probably my favorite building in Rome. It's the Vittoria Emanuele, which a lot of you might have seen in pictures. It's the huge palace-like structure that is at the top of the hill once you go up past the Roman Forum. So you've got the beautiful street that takes you down to the Colosseum, or as you come up towards the major part of the city, the Vittoria Emanuele stands in all of its glory. And it's this enormous, beautiful palace that looks over most of Rome. And I would definitely recommend going to a bar there to look over it while you have a lovely Aperol. But
yeah, we had not booked a rooftop bar. Yeah,
book it in advance.
You have to book it in advance. They're very, very well sought after, but really amazing views. And yeah, we loved the birthday cake.
We do, yeah. And it was a lovely walk back. You can't really miss it, to be honest. No, you can't. You really, really can't. We walked past the Argentinian Square, where Caesar was murdered famously. Mm-hmm. So much history that is literally within a 30-minute walk.
Yeah.
You know, you're right, finding out so much. And it was awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. And then we went back to our hotel, changed again. And also, it was pretty hot. It was just only like the first day of September. So it was pretty warm. So we were just changing and acclimating to the different temperatures and whatnot. So we went back to our hotel, went out to dinner at the gluten-free restaurant, Sofia. What's?
La Sofita. Yes. Near the Vatican, there is this gorgeous, completely gluten-free restaurant called La Sofita Renovatio. And it is wonderful. I know you'll put the notes in for that spot, but it's just great pizza. It's not entirely gluten-free. Great pasta. But
no, so they have a full gluten-free and a non-gluten-free.
That was it, yeah. It's free for all, basically.
But it's certified by the Italian Celiac Association.
There
we
go.
So you can go there if you are celiac or you have any issues. And yeah, we had some drinks there. We had dinner. And then we walked back to Piazza Navona. And it was the end of day one. Absolutely beautiful day.
We did quite a lot first day, but that's Rome for you, I think. When you end up there, you just walk everywhere and explore everywhere, and you're gonna need to wear some comfy trainers.
100%, yeah, comfy trainers. As I mentioned, M Gemi, the shoes last episode, game changer. I wore them everywhere, and yeah, that was it for the first day. And moving into day two, we had another wonderful, wonderful day. And we started this day also doing a little bit of early walking. We started walking around Trastevere. How did I do?
Basically nailed it. Trastevere. Yeah. Trastevere.
Okay. We started walking around there. And this was another neighborhood that we wanted to check out. I think this was on your list, Hugh, that you hadn't been before.
Yeah, I hadn't been.
Yeah. Okay. You hadn't been. You wanted to walk around. And we started with a little bit of coffee. As you noted, it's your favorite
it's in the pretty world. Good. Yeah.
We started with some coffee while some places opened up because we were pretty early again. And I think that we had got down there at maybe 7:30-ish. And we checked out some churches.
We did. This area, Trastevere, is wonderful because you've got these ancient cathedrals and churches hidden within the ranks of everyday Romans. And what I mean by that is tiny apartments that everyone's living in, beautiful streets, but you go around a corner and suddenly you've got a church from 200 AD just there, and you witness it in all its glory.
It's so stunning. They were amazing. We spent a pretty good amount of time in one of them. And once we did that, we worked up a bit of an appetite and we headed over to one of my favorites. We got breakfast at Aromaticus Trastevere, and this is a vegan, gluten-free breakfast spot that was amazing. I had gluten-free tiramisu here, which that actually was the only time that I had tiramisu in Italy, was this spot. And they had juices, they had smoothies, they had so many things. I think I spent like so much money because I just wanted to get it all. And if you have any sort of, you know, eating intolerance, you know how rare it can be to find a place where you feel fully comfortable about what you're eating. And so I've went fully indulgent here, but we had a lovely time here and we had a bit of recalibration before we decided to continue to walk around, view some shops that had opened up, and did a little bit of shopping, but not too much shopping, actually. I think a lot of the places were actually closed because we were there on Sunday.
Yes.
So that was a bit of, you always forget that Sunday's
the day of rest.
It's the day of rest. And we forgot that. But there were a couple of places open. So nothing to be alarmed of, but it just didn't end up being the, you know, shop full sweep that we had thought it was going to be. Or me, that I thought it was going to be.
No, it's a great spot. Would really recommend having a walk around there at minimum, or booking one of the many unbelievable restaurants. We went to this great cafe, but you walk through and you've got these stunning spots hidden away through all the different squares. And there's a few there that go to the ones where you're hearing Italian. That would be another recommendation. Yes, tourist spots will get you and the food is still gorgeous. But if you see two men gesticulating at one another or a very beautiful skinny Italian woman having a espresso and a cigarette out front, you know that that's where you're going to get a classic experience of what Rome feels like, but also what it tastes like.
And on that, I actually felt in Trastevere, there was a lot less tourists. They were there, but there wasn't so many.
Overloaded, yeah.
We were at a cafe that the whole menu was in Italian, and there's, you know, a lot of people who were there were speaking Italian. So it's not a big tourist hub. And I think that was really nice. But we ended our time there and recalibrated again at our hotel. And
it's quite nice to have a spot to fall back to. I'd also recommend staying centrally. It doesn't have to be Piazza Navona.
It has to be Piazza Navona.
It has to be Piazza Navona.
I think it's funny, though, as we're going through this, and we're talking about how often we went back to Relea Orso, it is really confirming how central it was to everything that we were doing. So it is a good place to stay near because you can do this day in and day out. If we were staying, you know, I don't know, somewhere else, we might not have been able to go back so many times. And it was really nice to go back, have a little rest, have a little change, you know, top up on water and then set sail again before too long.
Absolutely. And what I would say, and what we aren't including, because we didn't get the opportunity to do it, is the Vatican City.
We didn't get the opportunity.
Didn't get the opportunity. Yeah. Day three, it would have been that. But again, if you're staying around the Navona region, or the Navona Square, should I say?
The Navona region.
Region. Then it's literally a 15-20 minute walk, and Castel San Angelo is the old prison of Rome. It's just by the Vatican City, and I would really recommend going to see both one day, committing yourself to that side of the city.
Yeah, it was stunning. We walked by both of them, and I 100% agree. I wish we had a third day there. But that being said, we had a wonderful time at Basilica of Santa Maria, the museum we talked about in our last podcast. This was amazing. First and foremost, it was free. I think we noted it in the last podcast. Not so sure if it's every Sunday, but this Sunday it was free.
Yes, if you head there on any Sunday, it's free attendance or entry, should I say. So that is 100% worth it. Look, if you're paying 10, 15 euro for a ticket anyway, do it. It is just a step into a different world.
It is. And this was really, really monumental. It was so fascinating to see how old. Well, this museum is built on top of one of the buildings that was there.
Was at the top of the Roman Forum. So absolutely. It's right behind the birthday cake. And yeah, what it is just a culmination and collection of various fossils, but also still building structures that were found and dug up, really. So what's really interesting about this museum, if you're going to call it that, is the museum is built around the artifacts rather than the artifacts being brought to the museum.
Yeah, really, really cool. Really unique, unlike anything I've ever seen before. And it was so massive. There's no way you could get through it in one day. We were there for a few hours and it was so much to take in.
It's also quite cool in there.
But it is cool.
Would say it's quite a nice step away from the heat if you're looking for something to do early mid-afternoon.
100%. I think I said this in our Paris episode as well, but one of the ways we got out of the heat midday to the early evening was the many great museums, because you learn so much, you get to see and experience so many different parts of the history, and you get to do it at a really nice temperate climate. So
spot on.
Couldn't recommend it enough. After that, we went to our really, really loved restaurant to have a late lunch.
Yes. So it was a late lunch, wasn't it? God, the times you eat in Rome are definitely different.
Maybe 3 or 4.
It was 4 when we went there, I think. And this was one thing that I wouldn't change for food. We'll get into that in a second. But we went over to the Pantheon in Rome, which I'm sure a lot of you will know. Amazing old structure, many, many moons BC, and contains what can only be said is the best sun rays through any building, through this gigantic looming hole, which the Romans used to look up to see their mystic gods and the faith that is beholden within this. You can tell I'm passionate about it. But we didn't get the chance to go in, mainly because at 3 p.m. you have a queue of 2+ hours to try and get in. And we just figured we're not going to do that.
No, we weren't going to be able to do it. Definitely book in advance. We actually didn't really look at the booking system, so we'd have to take a view on it. But it was, I mean, the line was incredible. So we did, however, decide there's a really lovely shop right next to the Pantheon with really great little gifts and trinkets with very unique and fun, cute aesthetic designs. So we did go there instead, and we got some really cool art from Drawing Bike, which is a Italian artist who makes these amazing pieces of art on pieces of cardboard.
Keep an eye out for her. Shopping bags, cardboard. She's on a bike. She stands or sits in front of one of the many great pieces of architecture and just paints/draws away.
It's amazing. She's so talented. So we actually brought one of her pieces back. And so we did that instead of the Pantheon. But I do think that it's perfect for our next trip. I think that we, just weren't able to make it happen this time. But to be honest, I think that we had a really good mix of really touristy things and then some things. You know, the museum was, you know, touristy for sure, but it wasn't overloaded with tourists by any means. Not anyway like the Pantheon was. And my goodness, if you don't have to go in that area at 3 p.m., don't. Because it's in such stark contrast to when we walked by the Pantheon after the Trevi Fountain.
At 7:15 in the morning, exactly.
Yeah.
And yeah. To give you an idea as well, the Pantheon is in the center of what is a maze, an interpolation of loads of different tiny streets all leading into this square. And so you have loads of opportunity to explore. And that's where we found these great shops. You went into this amazing leather store that you ended up getting a backpack from as well. But yeah, it's a really great place. But at 3 p.m., you can't move.
You can't move. And I can't even imagine what it would be like in the middle of, you know, July, August, because this was September. So with that being said, we managed to somehow find our way into Er Facoliaro. How did I do?
You did fine. You did great. Don't you worry about it. Yes. And we somehow managed to find our way. I think what you mean is I had this in the back of my mind.
Okay.
Yeah. Having heard about it and put a bit of research in.
You had Googled this moments before.
They're not moments before. I think you can give me more faith than that. But El Facilaro.
Okay.
F-A-C-I-O-L-A-R-O.
Yep, sounds bad.
People can give me a hard time on the way I'm saying it if they need to. But what this place is what can only be described as the best pizza and pasta that either of us had throughout entirety of our Italy trip.
They took all the truffles that they had in that restaurant and put it into my gluten-free pasta truffle dish.
It was unbelievable. It was the best service. So it was just really great guy who told us his entire life story, but he was so passionate about the food, and you could tell they were all so keen to share their story. And this is one that's been there since I think 1910, crazy.
The minimum, maybe even earlier.
Yeah, it honestly could be earlier than that. And it's, you know, handed down through the generations of the family that have run it. And we loved it. It was a great, great feeling in there. it wasn't too busy because a lot of people were sucked in by the various tellers telling them to come into the best pizza in Rome. But actually, El Facilera has the best pizza and pasta in Rome.
It was,
and if you go, you actually have to go to this restaurant.
Yeah, it was unreal. 10 out of 10. And they had so many other things on the menu and absolutely amazing.
Yeah,
so
you could go there every day and pick a different
dish. Go there every day. And they have gluten-free. So they had gluten-free pizza and pasta. So cannot recommend that enough. We loved it and perfect near the Pantheon. It is a bit difficult to find places that may be a bit touristy, but this place, although it is in a bit of a touristy area, it was stunning. So you can find them, you know, it just takes a little bit of time. Moving on from this wonderful lunch, we had a bit of a nap. So took some downtime.
Yeah, I mean, it was already 5:36 by this stage.
It's only maybe like 5, yeah.
Okay, 5 or 6, yeah.
Took a little nap, and then we headed to a bar, and we commuted there via Lime Bike as
Lime Scoot, yeah.
Or Lime Scooter. We had tried to get in to one of those rooftop bars, which is why we know you have to book ahead, because we tried to rock up and ask if they had any.
Yeah, you're made to look like a fool. I definitely wouldn't recommend that when I've been chatting some big game about these rooftop bars.
Yeah.
And they stare at you like you're speaking a different language, which you are. But the fact that you don't have a booking is a big surprise because they're probably booked out about 2 months in advance.
Yeah. But look, there's some really stunning ones and you should book them because that would be incredible. So we're adding it to the list for next time. But we went to X Galleria and we had a really stunning time. This is the cutest little cocktail bar. It also had these, what do you call them? These flatbreads. There's another word for them. I'm not quite sure.
I can't remember either. Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, they had these little flatbreads and they had some cured meats. So we got a charcuterie board. It was perfect for us for dinner. We were looking for something lighter anyway. And we just had some drinks. It was in the alleyway and everybody around us was speaking Italian. You could tell it was a really local spot, you know, a spot that people like to come to.
Yes. Yeah. So it was in the suburb of Monti, which is just north of the Colosseum. And Monti's great because it really is quite a busy nightlife area in general. A lot of folk anywhere from 20 to 40 will come here for a night out. There's loads of bars available. But for us, we went down this side street and this really was, we just found it.
It was fantastic
because we were walking through, we knew we'd come along and find something good, but we sat down in the middle of this great streets, couple of cars and mopeds bustling by, but just had a great few snacks, charcuterie board, and gorgeous drinks.
It was stunning. And then we spent actually a few hours there. And then we walked back to...
We spent a few hours there, found another bar as well. And then it was suddenly near 11 or something.
We did find another bar. And that's right. You were right. Then I had a bowl of pasta.
Yeah, that's when you truly embraced the Roman style and had like
10 p.m.
I think it was a 10 p.m. bowl of pasta.
When in Rome. And then we headed back home. The next day we got on the train to go down to the Amalfi Coast, and that concluded the Roman portion of the trip. But I think I left feeling so excited about Italy. It was the best couple of days and really had learned a lot. And, you know, I don't know about you, but I mean, you went to Italy a bit earlier, but for me, I was in lockdown. When I was in lockdown during COVID, thought about Italy a lot and I really wanted to see Italy. And leaving Rome was just felt like this really cool full circle moment of it's happening. I visited this stunning city and I cannot wait to explore more.
100%. And I think if we're going to recommend anything with Rome, know that you can have, and we said this in part one, but you can have so many different types of holidays there. We had two and a bit days. Well, you know, 2.5 days. And that was actually, we achieved an incredible amount within that period of time. Walked all over the place, passed out at night, both filled to the brim with great food, but also because we'd done 25,000 steps. And you can do it that way. I would really recommend that way. Maybe spend three and a half days if you want to try and tick off every tourist hotspot that you want to. But if you've got a week there, you have so much opportunity to really dig a little deeper. And I've known some people who spent summers there, and you know, I spent a summer there as well. And you can really localize yourself and start to feel like it's a city you could probably live in, because it's got so many layers, just like the fact that Rome is literally different layers of city built onto one another.
Yeah, no, it's really incredible, and would definitely recommend it. I think the only other thing that we have to follow up on from our last episode is your top three tips for traveling Rome.
Yes. Well, I might let you lead with this then, if you had to.
But I did remember the last episode. We just didn't get to yours.
Oh, God. Yeah. No, we didn't. We didn't. My top three. Okay. What were yours?
Mine was the fashionable bum bag, the walking shoes, and really light, breezy clothes.
Yes. Mine would be to pack light. You literally are just going to need not a lot. Your bum bag worked super well for you. I was wearing a backpack one day. I just didn't need to bring a backpack round.
Then you transitioned to
I transitioned to a bum bag, as much as I hated it. I'm sorry, but it was very useful. And then my second thing would be embrace randomness there. Yes, have like an itinerary, but also if you see something cool, go and explore it. Don't just be of the thought that, you know, we've got to stick to this really tight schedule. If you haven't got any certain booking times, go down that random street, because you'll find something that you've never seen before.
Yeah. And I think it's really important to know, while we're talking about this itinerary, we only had the Colosseum booked and the first night's dinner
exactly
booked.
Yeah.
We didn't have anything else. We didn't have the museum booked. We totally figured that out when we were there. And so take this itinerary, use it with, you know, pick and choose with what you like, but
have it as a loose plan.
Leave some time open, because even, you know, we didn't have an issue with finding lunch spots, and we were able to move around. And I think that that is, yeah, I really think that's a really good suggestion.
And my third, what would my third be? Yeah, oh, don't buy peanut butter from a chemist.
Okay.
Yeah, we're going to go there. We're going to go there.
Someone's going to bring up.
Yeah, because it needs to. Just bear in mind, you're in Italy. You can eat food wherever. And okay. Christine, in fairness to her, you're going to let me finish the story. Sure. Christine, in fairness to her, has been to a lot of cities before where, unfortunately, they don't accommodate gluten-free eaters like they do in Rome. And you didn't know that. So what she did, which was, upon first glance, a very clever thing, which was buy a small jar of peanut butter.
Which, funny enough, they sell in the pharmacy.
Which, again, random as ever, but so
and protein bars for those who are interested.
And protein bars, there we go. But what you will also understand is during the day of Rome, it gets very hot. And if you don't have anywhere to put this peanut butter and you're planning on bringing it round with you, the best option as a lovely girl in Rome is to make your boyfriend carry it. Fair enough. Okay, I'll do the duties. I know what I signed up for. I signed the contract. But that jar will also get very hot, and during the hustle and bustle of walking around everywhere, in the tote bag that your boyfriend is holding on the second day, it is going to break. And the problem with that is your boyfriend may or may not have, with the lovely shopping, bought himself a gorgeous new pair of shorts, linen shorts, which proceeded with, unfortunately, some very, very ugly vomit looking melted peanut butter on the pair of shorts. You fixed it. We can go there. But
peanut butter gate.
Peanut butter gate. Unfortunately, I wasn't a very happy bunny at that stage.
No. And it is an understatement that the peanut butter got on the shorts. It did, in fact, get on me as well. It got on you. It got all over everything in the bag. And in hindsight, I should have put it in a plastic bag. But
I love that that's your hindsight. Hindsight, just don't buy it.
I will say, because it has a lot of protein in it. So it's a really good snack. Okay. And you can buy bananas.
Yeah.
And so I stand by the purchase. However, it could have been packaged differently. And we also bought it in the morning. So we did have it all day. So it was kind of banging on against, you know, different.
And someone might have said that you don't need it. But anyway, my point three is sometimes take the wisdom of your partner on board when you're deciding what to do with the day.
Well, the good thing is Italy does sell stain remover. It's very strong and it does get out peanut butter stains. So
it does.
Tip number 102 from this episode is if in doubt, Italy does sell stain remover. And you have a loving girlfriend who scrubbed the new shorts nearly to death and managed to get everything out so that you can still wear them today.
And I thank you for that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So but those are my top tips.
All right. Peanut butter gate.
Peanut butter gate.
My last thing I'll say before we'll sign off is get a SIM card before you get to Italy. We had a really hard time. There was a SIM card drought. We didn't get one until early day two. And it was just a bit inconvenient. And so I think use an eSIM. I've actually made a episode on how to get data abroad. And that one didn't include eSIMs as much as it could have because I hadn't used them yet. But since then, I've used them and really helpful. So do that instead of trying to get one there because that process took us about 40 minutes, huge waste of time. And we had gone to so many places to try to get an eSIM or a SIM card.
And no one had any. Yeah, no, spot on. Get an eSIM, save yourself the trouble of walking around Rome trying to get one.
Yeah, it was the first place that I found that was actually really difficult. So anyway, with that, that is our two-day Rome itinerary. Thank you, everybody, for listening today and for joining us. And if you are new here, we would love for you to follow us on Instagram or TikTok. And if you enjoyed our podcast, please leave us a review. If you didn't, please feel free to disregard the review option. And we will see you all next time. Thanks so much, Hugh.
Thanks all. Arrivederci.
Arrivederci.